Hello and welcome to Growth for Good, where we talk with the people driving change, resilience and innovation across our communities. In this episode, we're joined by Michael Miel, co-founder of Miel's Gelateria, a family business that's been scooping success from the heart of Inverness since 2016. From their Italian heritage to Highland craftsmanship, Miel's story is one of bold vision, community spirit and staying true to quality whilst embracing technology and growth. So we'll be hearing how Michael turned a skeptical idea that an ice cream shop couldn't survive in the Highlands into a thriving local brand now expanding across the region. This is a story about heritage, innovation, and the power of purpose in small business. So let's get into it. Well, I'm delighted to welcome Michael Miel of Miel's Gelateria in Inverness and other places, as we'll hear shortly. So thanks for joining us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you very much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. So tell me, first of all, about Miel's. What makes your gelato so special? What's the key to that?
Well, I think the first and foremost, the innovation of the flavours is absolutely key. I think we were, when we kind of started, we were bringing something that had never been seen before to Inverness. The mad flavours, the excitement of just the innovation of, you know, not just your regular tastes.
So pudding, dessert, ice cream, gelato, it's always exciting for people. What you've done is you've made it more exciting.
Yeah, but we're making gelato and selling gelato, which in its own right is different from ice cream. Mm-hmm. You're smoother, creamier, less icy textures, more denser, more flavours are all part of what makes up Miel's gelato. Now going back for generations, it's how our family's done it.
Well, I want to ask you about that in a minute, but let's just talk about gelato first, because obviously people keep saying, you know, you're selling ice cream. How do you feel about that when you hear people say you're selling ice cream?
As long as they know it's us. As long as they're still coming to us. I think when people say they're going to the ice cream shop, and I think we've became a place that people know as the ice cream shop, which is very nice to know. And when they're coming to us, they know there's a difference. They maybe don't understand the difference, but they can tell that it is different and it's hopefully better than most other companies that are manufacturing ice cream.
Why do you know it's better?
So from the artisan point of view is that each product is made by hand. It's not made in massive continuous freezers that batch out hundreds of thousands of litres a day. We are in the factory ourselves manufacturing the product by hand, every ingredient, all the fresh fruits, everything that get added by hand. We then use small artisan batch freezers which take the product from a liquid form to a frozen form. And those add in a natural amount of air.
So there's a way of doing it, but there's a craftsmanship around.
Absolutely.
That's put together.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think when you look at a regular ice cream, or you think of ice cream, you think of these flat kind of trays that the ice cream's getting scooped right through the centre of, and that's not us. Anyone that's been in our shops will see that it's mounded up, it's peaked up right out, the design and the art, and it is its own kind of art form, that how we want to present it and decorate the cabinet, because you eat with your eyes.
So gelato is different from ice cream.
It's just different, yeah.
It's just different.
It's just different. There's a lot
of science.
You
would say better.
I would absolutely say better. Yeah. When ice cream first started, it was just gelato. There was no difference. Gelato is the Italian word for ice cream. But over generations, British people like to make more profit. So they add more air and use machines that can pump air through products, whereas back in the early 1920s, etc., there was none of these machines. It was just artisan gelato. We've just kind of taken it back to basics, but with this huge, expansive portfolio of flavours that we can produce.
And so that's something about the name, gelato versus ice cream. You also get people saying, I'm going down to Miele's or, you know, whatever. It's not the way to pronounce it.
Yeah.
A lot of people have lots of different pronunciations.
Absolutely.
For Miele's. So does that annoy you? Does that give you any problem?
Not at all. I've been called much worse than a football pitch.
Of course, you're a footballer, aren't you? Forest Mechanics.
To play football as well.
So the name, as you say, you're called worse, but it doesn't worry you from a business point of view. People can just relax and call it what
absolutely.
They want to call it.
Absolutely.
But just for the record, it is Miele.
It's Miele's Gelateria. So yeah. Miele is our surname. Mm-hmm. There is still controversy further than that. In Italy, you would not put an S on the end of it.
Right. So
it would
that's
be
a no-no in traditional circles.
And it would be Miele.
Ah, right.
It would officially be Gelateria de Miele in Italy. But when something is of someone in this country, we put an S at the end of it. And we thought that going Gelateria de Miele just would blow people's minds too much. So Miele's Gelateria was the common denominator.
So you've obviously given this a lot of thought.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the kind of impressive things I think about your story is that you started this business at the age of 22.
Yeah.
Is that right? Yeah.
Yeah, that's right.
So that was quite a big gamble to do that.
Yeah.
It must have taken a lot of kind of determination and what will you explain to me what it took at the age of 22 to do this?
A lot of guts, I think. I've always been very forthcoming with my ideas, and I'm not a shy person, and I'm not shy to put my point of view across to different things. And myself and my brother, we were working the oil industry at the time, and that was having its problems. We'd always wanted to move into the family kind of history and put our names beside our grandfather, great-grandfather, uncles, and so on. And I just knew it was time. I knew it was time that I had to do something for myself that... It's very hard to explain.
But that must have been quite difficult practically as well. How do you get finance? Who do you turn to at the age of 22? I mean, this is a really interesting story.
Yeah, the answer to that is nobody wants to give you money. You've just got nobody to turn to.
You're a high risk at that age, aren't you?
Massive. I look back at it now and look at 22-year-olds that we employ and think I was your age, and I wouldn't give you money. I wouldn't give me money. I wouldn't have given me money to get started. But what I had in my head that I wanted to achieve, I knew we could achieve it. Mm-hmm. And we're so hardworking. It's one of our biggest traits is that we are very, very hardworking. We jump in with two feet and we'll make it work. We're also very, very competitive. And we don't allow to be second. That's just it's a no-no. Mm. So we were driven and determined. And when I approached my brother to have the conversation, would he fancy it as well? And yeah, he jumped on board. We went to Business Gateway. Initially, I'd met with a guy, Craig Robertson, who was unbelievable at helping write this business plan. And the business plan exercise on its own was fantastic. But then taking that to the banks, they just seen 22. That's they couldn't get past it. And then they couldn't get past it. It was gelato or ice cream, as they also referred to it in the north of Scotland, despite 100 years of our family manufacturing it. And you see all these other big companies, you've got your Mackeys and Rizzas and things in the north of Scotland that succeed. They couldn't see that. They didn't want to give us the money to get started. And it was a really, really difficult time to try and persuade.
How did you get past that then? You obviously had a really good vision, lots of enthusiasm, determination, that will to win. You had a good solid business plan. What was the breakthrough for you?
Parents.
It's the bank of mum and dad.
Bank of mum and dad. It wasn't that easy as such, but I myself and David, we took the business plan and we went to Miel's of Lossie, where my dad was a partner. And we proposed our plans. We stood in the middle of the room in this meeting and we spoke about what our plans were. And it was, again, it was a no from them, but it was different because they just didn't have the finances to reinvest in themselves or the space to for what we would have required, because they could also see that it could potentially work too. But then when my dad was then asked by one of my cousins, well, what are you going to do? The boys are wanting to go and do this. What are you staying or are you going? And he said there and then to them that he was going to leave and join us. And
bold move.
Big move. Big, big move. I thought I was being bold. And then for my dad, who is, you know, now 65, we go back 9 years, he was 56. He'd had job security, he had a retirement plan, everything like that, and he just basically picked it up and threw it out the window and said, we're going to let them follow their dream.
Fantastic to have that kind of family support. But of course, family is really important in the business anyway,
yeah.
Because this is about tradition.
Yeah.
It's about, you know, something that goes way back into your DNA, isn't
it? Yeah, absolutely. It's, yeah, there's a huge family tradition there now. That's four generations. My great-grandparents, they were in Italy. There's a lot of stories when you kind of go through the family tree of where people were, and Italians were moving around quite a lot. And at that period of the kind of 1910s, 1920s, there was a lot of movement between Italy and America. Italy was a horrible, horrible place to be. My great-grandfather actually moved from Italy to, he landed in England, and he walked from, I believe it was around about Hull, and he walked up to Edinburgh with his brother.
They walked from Hull to Edinburgh?
Yeah. And there was only work for one of them. But he was then told that there would be, his brother then stayed there, he stayed in Edinburgh. And my great-grandfather, Michael, was told that there would be work in Forres. There was a guy they knew that they could get work with. Now, the story is that he walked then from Edinburgh to Forres and met with the person that owned the fish and chip shop in Forres, and that's the Northern in Forres. He then worked there and eventually then took over as the owner in Forres. And
so he must have had to save every penny that he
absolutely
he was working for.
I mean, I can't believe it, you know, that's what they did and the sacrifices they made. But they had huge families as well at the same time. My granddad had 9 brothers and sisters. So he would go back to Italy and he would provide for his family in Italy. And then when my granddad was old enough, he then came over to Scotland as well. And he lived and worked with my granda, and then he went back to Italy and married my granny, and then they too decided that it was time to move to Scotland. And incidentally, didn't move into Forres to work with his dad. He opened my granda and my granny opened their own shop in Burghead. Now the shop was part of their house. It was their house and their living room actually attached to the shop, which is a really nice photo, and it shows how small the shop actually is when the two of them are standing side by side. And it just says ices. And so he had his own little ice cream shop, as he would have called it. Although he was making gelato at the time, unbeknown to them, there would become a difference 20 years on. So they worked and lived there, where my dad and his two brothers and his sister were born and grew up. And then they moved to Hopeman to start to take on a new place, which would do then fish and chips, ice cream, and a cafe. My grandfather, he had a couple of other ventures as well, successful ventures with restaurants in Lossiemouth and the Oakwood, and just outside of Elgin. And unfortunately, he passed away when he was really young, so he wasn't able to see. I never met him. He died a couple of years before I was born. But I think he'd be very proud of where we've came and the fact that we've continued doing what he done and his father done as well.
So there's really strong bonds throughout your family. You're talking about that big Italian family all working together, helping to support each other, and that's come through into the modern day meals.
Absolutely. And I think that's one of the key parts of what people have bought into about us is we are a family business. There's a lot of history there, and we're not there to try and rip people off. We're there to try and provide for our families and to give a good product and an honest product and an honest service to people. So I think that's part of what people take to us a little bit about. I could be wrong, but that's my impression of what I've heard from customers. So yeah.
When you started the business in Church Street, there were many people who thought an ice cream shop, as they saw it, we know it's gelato, an ice cream shop would never work in Inverness, particularly given that you opened it in the winter. What was your thinking at the time? You must have been really confident you could get this to work. I mean, I was a neighbour of yours at the time, and I thought, God, that's going to be a really tough sell down the bottom of Church Street. And if people don't know Church Street in Inverness, it's not in the main shopping area, is it? So what gave you the confidence that was going to work?
So one of the big reasons for opening in the winter, it was always the plan, was don't open straight into summer. We knew Inverness would be hugely touristy, and that's not our, you know, main demographic. That's not who we were aiming for. We were aiming for locals.
You wanted to be going for the community.
Yeah, absolutely, and the local people. And we knew if we opened in the winter, now opening on the 9th of December may necessarily wasn't the plan. There was obviously delays that caused these things, but we weren't going to hold off any longer. We were going to open, you know, snow, sun, rain, so it didn't matter.
Get a gelato for Christmas, you were going to do it anyway.
We were going to do it anyway. We knew what we were bringing, and we knew that it was different. We knew nobody else was doing anything like it. We would sit for, you know, days at the top of the lane that goes down to the river and watch people moving around. And we knew that people would walk up there, but never turn left towards our shop. Because that end of Church Street, it was really, really quiet. Where even the landlord for the shop said to us, are you sure you want to do this? Now, that was the owners of Stratton Dairies, which was there many years ago. He's still the landlord now. And he was saying, like, boys, what are you doing here?
That's some confidence behind all that. Yeah.
But we knew what we were bringing, and we knew that we had something to give, and we wanted to go for, you know, showing our customer service, showing our product to local people, that by the time it came to the spring, more and more people would know about it. And during a meeting with a supplier of ours, we came up with this plan to give everything away for free.
Give it away for free.
Give it away for free. Right. Day one.
So that sounds not like a part of your business plan. It sounds like a kind of last minute decision.
Well, it wasn't a last minute decision. No. We'd been thinking about it for weeks by the point that we actually opened. And it definitely wasn't a part of the plans. Yeah. But as the money was severely running out. I mean, we'd left our jobs 3 months before we
and we've got to remember there's a remortgage going on in the background, there's all this stuff, so high stakes for you.
Very, very high risk. And I remember there was a few moments where we said, like, well, maybe we shouldn't be giving it away for free. We need to make something, or we're going to be out in the street. again, I think I was just so stuck with, no, we're going to do it. We have to do it, because the marketing of giving it away for free, I mean, people are going to talk about it, an ice cream gelateria opening in the 9th of December when it's snowing outside, where it is. But when you start giving it away for free, there's more and more talking points. And people are then coming down to try it. And we've seen the same kids after school coming in 6 or 7 times. And we just said to them, go and bring someone new and you can come and have another one.
It's turned out to be a genius marketing move for you, yeah, when you look back on it, hasn't it?
Yeah. I mean, the queues were down the street. The queues were out the door down the street all day. We designed the shop for how we thought it would plan out for people, customers coming in. And that went out the window as well, because we thought, oh, there'll be a few people stand there. We never expected queues. We never expected huge, huge queues. We thought it would be good and be successful, but to be on some days, the levels of busyness was never anticipated.
And you also did something really that would challenge most people, which is say, right, the opening hours are going to be different.
Yeah. We open till 9 p.m. every night. Now, that's a massive...
9 p.m. for what people consider gelato, but what people consider an ice cream shop, yeah, to be open till 9 p.m. I mean, who eats ice cream at 9 p.m. at night?
Lots of people. Lots of people. So, in Italy...
Obviously now, but it's still a big risk in Inverness.
Yeah, in Inverness. Yeah. And I think that's where we had to, you know, remind ourselves that sometimes in Inverness, things happen a little bit later than other areas. When we were in Italy, for instance, we would never eat a dessert typically in a restaurant. You would always go for a walk to a gelateria, and that's just the norm. The dessert shops do the dessert, the restaurants do the main meals, and every gelateria is actually open till about 11 p.m. or midnight. We thought, well, maybe can I go in between
so you're,
here a
you're
little
not
bit?
Open long enough. Then.
We're not, maybe not open long enough, but we wanted to do that, and we know that in Glasgow and Edinburgh and things, there's a lot of places that are open really late. But Inverness, everything shut 5-6 o'clock. That was it. For the first 3 months, we never seen anyone. Don't get me wrong, we seen the odd.
So three months with virtually no foot traffic. You must have been panicking. How did you? What broke that logjam for you?
Hot Nutella sauce.
Hot Nutella sauce.
Hot Nutella sauce. So hot Nutella sauce over your gelato. That was the big catalyst to evening trade. So it was the middle of February by this point. And again, we hadn't been busy. We manufactured everything in the back of the shop at the time. And I did the majority of the manufacturing. David, who is very, very customer service focused, he would do all the front of house serving, and we would obviously collaborate when required. But at that time of the night, I was working in the back until he shouts me through and, Michael, get through here. So I walked through and I'm like, wow. The queue, we'd just never seen it. It had never happened before during the day or at night. Even on opening day, it hadn't looked like this. The queue came up the shop to the top and then went back out the door and down the street.
That must have blown your mind to see that after all that time.
Yeah, I mean, we hadn't seen anybody at 7:30 till this point, and then we seen everybody.
And that just opened the floodgates, did it?
That was it. Yeah. Every night, I think people then started to get to know that the parking outside, you could park in a loading bay, you wouldn't get fined, we realised that we had spaces to come into. It wasn't as busy in the town generally. It was easier to get to. And that time in the evening became the busiest time. People then, we did some marketing on it as well, that have dinner, come see us after, we'll sort dessert. And people bought into that, and that enjoyment of just going and doing something just a little bit different. You know, get the kids out or just go for a walk as a couple or... You know, and we've tried to always aim the business not just to one type of person or one area. We try and open it up to lots of people. So you could be out on a nice dinner date for the first time with someone and come in for dinner. You could be at something where you're dressed up in suit and tie, come in, or you could just be in your comfies, in your pyjamas and walk in, and everyone feels welcome. We've always tried to welcome people in as if they're walking into the front living room.
Does that go back to that family tradition thing, the living room thing?
Yeah. Yeah, back in the family living room, that's where you're getting welcomed into. And that's always what we've tried to achieve. And I think people have kind of really bought into that. And that point in the evening is...
Yeah. So you you opened the shop, you're doing quite well. It gets to 2019. We have a pandemic.
Yeah.
Everything's shut down. What happened during that time for you?
Yeah, 2020, March. Yeah, things have been good. There's obviously been ups and downs with any business. Mm. We'd obviously kind of been through the Brexit thing just before that as well. And then we get to 2020 with these major plans for what we wanted to do next. And yeah, then we sat in a room and we're like, if this happens, what are we going to do? We need a plan. And we came up with the idea of doing home delivery. Home delivery was something that we'd never thought we would get into, particularly at that point. It wasn't ever in the plans to become a home delivery service.
If you're sitting in your house, you know, your flat or whatever, it's not the first thing you think of, I'll get some gelato delivered. It was quite a new idea.
It was quite new. But we said, right, if we do this, how are we going to do it? And we'd managed to plan it about 3 or 4 days before we officially went into lockdown. And I remember Boris Johnson coming on the TV and telling us all just to stay at home.
Yeah.
He would. Telling us all just to stay at home and, you know, not move. And that for us, again, still wasn't an option. At the time, my son was 5 months old, and we had a business that we needed to keep moving. It was still very young, a very young business. It was only really 3 years old, just over 3 years old. And sitting around doing nothing wasn't an option. You had certain businesses that were still allowed to open, but our business kind of fell into this really awkward kind of category where it wasn't going to get any support because we were essential, or looked at as an essential business from the outset, but was the people's perception of us an essential business? So we were really trying to weigh that up, like, should we stay open? Or with everything that's in the media, are people just going to then turn against us because you shouldn't be open? So we had a lot to weigh up, but we had this delivery plan, and within 24 hours of us being told to go into lockdown, we switched into a delivery service and we shut the shop from the outside. We put out the phone number. We then put the flavours up on social media every day, what we had available. And we did slots where we had drivers who was just our guys to start with, who needed to work as well. We had certain people that couldn't be furloughed as well, which we needed to keep them in work. We didn't want to let anyone go. That also wasn't something that we wanted to be known for. So we kept every single person on. We flipped into delivery service and we put in slots for every hour. It was brilliant. It was great fun, but so chaotic. And I think that's what made it quite fun at the time, was it was chaos. You didn't have time to think about COVID as such. You just had to focus on the next hour and getting these deliveries to people. And the phone was ringing constantly.
It must have been really exciting for somebody like you, who clearly, from what we've talked about so far, just sees a challenge and runs at it like a bull, if you don't mind me saying that. That's the way
absolutely
it comes across. So you're just going, right, we're going to hunt this one down. Of course, difficult times, you've managed to keep that going. You've been investing in the business because it was important to you to use new technology.
Yep.
But also, you know, not to lose your traditional methods. How have you done that? How have you moved into new technology but keeping that traditional life?
So a lot of technology is obviously moving substantially all the time. And
because you're a big water user, aren't you? That's something that's
water cools all our compressors. Mm-hmm. So we've moved into having water glycol chiller systems, which are closed loop chillers. And basically our machines prior, when we moved into our new manufacturing unit, we calculated up the amount of water usage that the machines were going to use. And it came out at approximately 27 million litres of water a year. And it's something that we never anticipated at the start, was thinking, oh, how's this going to impact the environment?
So flushing all that water away, essentially. Yeah.
So, but when you start a business, or particularly when we started the business, it was never, ever a consideration. We never thought, oh, we're going to have to do things that are going to be sustainable. And over the last 5 years, I would say there's been a massive uplift in sustainability and looking after the environment even more so, not just picking up your litter,
etc. Is that important
to you? It is important. But at the time when we first started, I would say it wasn't something that entered my head. But coming into now, it's something that we always look at when we're buying a new piece of equipment or a new technology or freezers, or it's got to be something that is environmentally friendly. And the water, for instance, it's fresh water. It's not getting used for anything other than cooling a compressor down. And so what we were looking at was like 27 million litres of water a year is just insane. Mm. So we invested in glycol chillers, and effectively they work the opposite of a central heating system. They're cold water that go around a closed loop pipework and go back into themselves and then chill that down again. That means that we only use 220 litres of water every year, which is mixed with the glycol, and that just stays in
there.
That's
a massive, massive reduction.
Yeah, from 27 million to 220.
Exactly.
It's, So we've, for the past 5 years, that's what we've been using for cooling the compressors, and we've added on different bits of equipment which help cool the product.
And do you feel that message, do you transmit that message to your customers as well, that you're looking after the sustainability aspects? Is that an important part of your marketing?
I don't think it's been something that we've consciously marketed. I don't know if it's ever something we've ever thought about as being a marketing strategy. Mm-hmm. It's just something that we do, to do our bit. It's possibly something that we should market a little bit more, but it's not something we've ever pushed to say we do X, Y, and Z to do our bit for the environment. It's just something that I think everyone that's in business needs to be doing. And whether they do it loudly or quietly, it's something that we all need to, you know, do our bit.
So we've heard a lot about what you're doing, about new technology that you're using, about your history, that fascinating tradition that you've been using to back up your business. What's in the future for Miels? Where are you going next? You've already opened an Avi Moor, you use mobile units and things like that. Yeah. What's next for you?
So I think solidifying where we are and what we are. I think making sure that our serviceability and everything is improving all the time. Looking at more recipes and more new exciting flavours all the time, and trying to really solidify the core of the business. And I try.
Is this about, you know, you've had this drive for quality and tradition. Is this about improving, constantly improving the quality, really getting down to the granular part of it?
Absolutely, absolutely. Continue to really try and improve that product and keep it moving. With a business like ours, you're always competing with the world, with Instagram and social medias across the world. So you're always monitoring what's going on elsewhere, and everybody else is as well. That's why we monitor it, because you need to see what trends are happening. So you're trying to follow those, but you're trying to also keep your head above kind of the parapet to try and be better, you know, and people look at something in Dubai and go, well, we've got this, you know, and that's where we want to be. And that's where our, you know, we want to solidify that and continue growing with it, move with the trends, but also solidify the core of the company. At the same time, there's been exponential growth within the company. And I've,
do you feel sometimes, I know this is quite common, you've got that big growth and then you go, right, how do I handle the growth? And you sometimes just have to pull it back in a bit.
Yeah, well, I use kind of Lego bricks sometimes as a kind of analogy.
Right, this is going to be interesting. Yeah.
Is that, well, I feel like we've been building up. Yeah. We built a core, we built a base, we then built up. And I feel that if you continue to build up too high, it's going to fall. So we need to continue to grow the base to then, you then can build the blocks higher and better and stronger. And then that's where we'll see the longevity of the business and a real, real future for the business. I feel that if you keep any business that just constantly grows at a rapid, rapid rate, there's so much problems can come with that and it can very, very quickly come crashing down. And that's where the Lego bricks comes into effect.
It's a good analogy. So, you know, looking back on, you know, your business, you know, when you started out, as we said, you're 22 years old, you had that sense of determination, you put the business plan together.
Yeah.
If you met another 22-year-old with the same kind of plan, the same kind of determination, what would your advice be to them now?
Go for it. And I think as long as you've got a clear idea, something that you know in your head is going to work, you've got to try it. Because I honestly could think of nothing worse than being an old man and wishing I'd done this. But the key to doing it is, and the, what I've tried to say to some other people that have looked at starting businesses, is you've got to jump in with 2 feet. Don't just dabble your toes. You've got to be invested in it. It has to become your life, particularly for the first few years. It has to, you have to live it. You have to breathe it. And if you dabble your toes in, it's probably not going to work out because you're holding another job. You've got to jump in with 2 feet.
So if you believe it, go for it.
You've got, yeah.
So what would you say to people as your recipe for sustainable growth in the future?
Is keep moving forward. And within your mind, you've got to stay strong and stay true to what you believed in from the very, very start.
Michael Meehl, thank you very much indeed for joining us on the Growth for Good podcast.
Thank you very much, Drew.
Well, that was Michael Meehl of Meehl's Gelateria, proof that tradition and technology can blend beautifully when driven by community and care. If you enjoyed this episode, please remember to follow, like, and subscribe wherever you get your podcasts, and share it with someone who loves seeing local business thrive. You'll find more stories, insights, and resources at drewhendry.scot, and of course, at Growth for Good. Thanks for listening and watching, and keep growing for good.